Accession number 30063, Reel 11.
Mr. Reed, Reel 11. You were on Cyprus, then orders came through for you to move. What happened to you next?
Orders come through from Mardi, from base depot, to say that I was required down there. And again, I had to pack whatever I had and go down to base depot and check in there. That was the end of the third Hussars, or any other Hussars. From base depot, I quickly learned what it was for. I had to take over a squad of operators and God knows what else from brigade headquarters, because they were short of NCOs to do the direction. So I was moved from the Mardi to the 7th Armoured Brigade headquarters.
This would be your second visit.
This is the second visit, mm-hmm. where I was in charge of the ACV, that's the Armoured Control Vehicle, which looked after the forward regiment. And at the time when I arrived there, the war was more or less static, with surveys going out and sort of the odd time for the regiments to build a muscle, sort of thing. Whereupon we did our work. It was a busy time, busy traffic on the ACV, both back to Cairo and forward to the lines. And along there came another division, the 4th Armoured Division, 4th Infantry Division, sorry, 4th Infantry Division, which was manned by the Indians, and they were part and parcel of the whole of the front line, curving round from the coast right inland. And there I'd been for about 10 days, and one day, again, meals were not sat down to. Meals were walk across to the cookhouse, or the cook wagon. Get it, walk away to where you were, keep out of the way, and have your meal. One meal a day. In the morning you got breakfast, and not breakfast. In the morning you got tea and maybe some broken biscuits. That was about it. But in the evening, you got a full dinner, really, in your mess tins, with something to start with. And then you got the main course, which could be bully beef or stew, or it was an improvement from what we talked about previously. And we got usually rice pudding. So the meal was substantial. It wasn't nice tasting or nicely served or anything like that, but it was good. And you went across there and you got your two Dixies and your cup, and you away you went back. And this happened one day when I had my Dixies and my main course and my cup, and I was having problems carrying it. And I put the melon, which we've been given to, on top of the cup, on top of my cup, and walked back. And the very next morning, I was absolutely shattered, crawling around. We had on the side of the vehicle, the ACV vehicle, canvas, and we used to sleep on the ground on a sheet of canvas. And I was shot all over the canvas. I couldn't hold myself. I couldn't stand. I was crawling around on my hands and knees with dysentery. And this was all because I put the melon on top of the cup, and when I was walking back, it washed the skin.
So this is where you got this disease from. And it's from that, from the
that's
skin.
Where it, that's yeah. where that was the only place I could go from mm-hmm. because I hadn't eaten anything else and didn't eat anything else.
Can I ask you what were the earliest symptoms? Can we talk about the disease itself? The very earliest symptoms mm-hmm. that you felt, well, there's something wrong. What were they?
Pain in the tummy, and straight away. A toilet.
Incontinence, in a sense.
Yeah, and I couldn't hold it. I just soaked it, running down my legs. I could not hold it any longer.
And you must have felt dreadful about it. I mean, you know.
Well, I didn't feel very good about it, but the lads were, you know, the rest of the lads, so we had a crew there. Mm-hmm. They were very good. And eventually, they got a... wasn't a doctor or anything. I think it was Sergeant Major. The next thing I knew, after 24 hours there, I was crawling around all over the place, and he was following me sort of style, just dripping away from me. Absolutely shocking.
It must have had a great effect on your strength.
It does. It weakens you completely. But that was early days. The rest had to come. So eventually I finished up in Alexandria. In hospital there, in the military hospital. And quite a big ward. There might have been, because this sort of thing, there might have been 20 beds, 30 beds maybe. And underneath I had a toilet bucket. But there was also three toilets. Now, three toilets to look after 30 men was great. Really, it was all very nice and clean. Matron was there, and nurses were there, and God knows. And there was always a queue standing outside the toilets, dashing like hell to get in. By that time, everybody, or most of them, including myself, had got rid of so much fluid from the body that we could hardly stand. And, you stood there and waited and shouted and God knows what else to get whoever was using the toilet get out quick who wanted to get in, but it just didn't happen. And eventually when I did get to the toilet, I couldn't do anything because there was nothing left inside. For I was in the toilet. I was in the hospital for about 3 weeks. The first 2 weeks, I didn't have anything to eat. Absolutely nothing. And I used to get the odd cup of Viral, the Oxo stuff. The odd cup. And then... we got something we used to call them. They were big jelly balls of fluid. We used to call them fish's eyes because that's what they looked for, and that's what we had to do to build our strength up again. So 3 weeks.
Do you know what was in these?
No,
this medication.
I can't even tell. They were clear, just a clear, about the size of a golf ball.
You had to swallow that, had you?
Yeah, had to swallow it. Yeah. Put it in. I had to swallow that, and eventually they kept on with the. I might have got two cups of good medicine. That happened for 3 weeks. You know, I was quite weak then. I'd had one or two meals, but limited. And they took me and gave me a berth on one of the holiday boats, which had been holiday boats, Thomas Cook's holiday boats before the war, and it was keyed up on the side of the river. So I went back to Cairo, packed the base depot, and they shipped me across to the boat and had a fortnight's holiday with them, build up. So that was good.
So what was discipline like in the hospital?
Was
it army discipline kind of thing?
Yeah, very severe. Your bed had to be straight. You couldn't get up and walk about if you wanted to. if you made a mess, you had to clean it up. The hospital was spick and span and clean, and the nurses were right bang. You couldn't mess about with them. It was
daily inspections of the beds.
Yeah.
And on those inspections, were you supposed to stand to attention or lie to attention?
No, senior bed would have everything military form. Sometimes if it was really hot, they used to let you lie on top of the bed. But if you wanted to go to the toilet, and you wanted to go, you could have done with one of them by yourself and sat there all day long, happy in the knowledge that, you know, you were doing something. So that was that. And it was over. So now what I had to do was go back to... If you were ill like that and your unit was away and doing a job or whatever, they never bothered sending you to the unit. They sent you back to Mardi, back to the base. And you start all over again, back to your unit, or wait there for another posting. And so I went back to the unit, and then... it happened. I was looking at the notice board to see what was up. There was always fresh names going up there, see if I knew anyone, see what I was going to do, whatever. And I thought, I don't want to go back under the desert again. I've done my bloody share. Why the hell should I, you know? And with all these buggers down here, let them get up and do something. That was my sort of attitude. But knowing full well that in the end, within days, I would be on my way again. Here's an experience. This is the bloke we'll look for. Get him up there. That was what happened in the days following my bout with dysentery. And I would advise, never get dysentery. It's the worst thing in the world, I think. So nevertheless, here I am again, hands in my pockets, waiting to see what's happening as far as postings are concerned, talking to people. What had been doing? Why have they been sent back? Who were they with? Have they done any fighting? This, that and the other. Where are you going next? Don't know. Waiting for them. I said, well, I'm not going to wait for them messing about. So I didn't wait. And there was a notice, a bit queer, you know, new posting sort of style. And it wasn't in keeping with the jargon of the army sort of style. And I thought, what the hell is this? And I had a word with, I think it was the Sergeant Major in charge down at West Depot. I knew him of old when he was in the Terriers at Larchfield Street.
Remember his name?
Oh, God. I can't remember his name now, but he was there, and he says, it's a new mob, Jim, you know. Something new, completely. I said, what do you mean, something new? Can't be bloody new, you know. And he said, well, it is. I can't tell you anything about it because I don't know. I said, what the hell are you talking about? You know, we almost had fisticuffs over this. So I thought, went to bed and thought about it. I said, went to bed, sleep on the sand, of course. Well, anything would be better than this, you know, sleeping down here on the sand. Well, what the hell did it do? So I said, right. It's something called SAS. It's got something to do with special air services. And what the hell is this special air service? Is it flying, you know, keeping order, or moving prisoners, or getting the injured blokes back to hospital and flying them in special air service? What about going in? This is available. I said, oh, right. So I said, okay. Eventually, after a lot of thought and not knowing what it is, it must be better than the desert. It must be. It's got to be. You can't get any lower then sleeping on bloody sand, where sometimes previously blokes have been in, peeing on it, and God knows, you just don't get any lower than that. Okay, so you look and see. And I saw the site, I said, what about this then? She says, all right, leave it with me. The next thing I knew, bingo, there's a truck, they take your bag, away you go. And the truck took me, and I think there was another lad, and there were two lads. And away we went, through the outskirts of Mardi. Also, the place was building up then, because there were, although it was early, that they were building reserves up for the 8th Army move, push ahead to Montgomery had taken over then. I think, yeah, Montgomery had taken over. And he was wanting to get everything built up and make sure I've got enough to go and beat these people. I'm not going to be beaten by them and lose my credibility. Right, Monty is going to win this battle for you. Okay. So where we went, got there. One hut with a slanted roof on. One hut. A few tents. And bits and pieces lying around. On the edge of the canal. It was right on the edge of the canal. And I thought, well, what the hell have I got here? Anyway, they did have a wireless buggy. You've seen these sort of square things that used to have. Mm-hmm. Those were, that's what they called a wireless study. So, got there, and this fellow would say, who are you? Nobody here. And then, yeah. Put your kid down there and stay there all night in the tent. There was another three or four blocks in there. And later, I learned, much later, that one of them was queer. I couldn't believe this. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing now with this lot called the SAS. The odd bloke walking about. Things, you know, the Bug Bunny sort of style. Morris, 8 horsepower things, like one of those. And before I knew it in the morning, there's blokes on this car, driving along upside in a bit sort of a desert lane with sand churned up. And blokes jumping off the back. Well, eventually I found out that they were exercising.
And were you taking part in this?
Did you? It was still strange to me. I just wakened up in the morning, didn't have a clue. By which time, I started getting inquisitive, and I learned, after having seen the bloke in charge, the captain in charge, that I was to look after the wireless station.
Do you remember the name of the captain who was in command?
Oh, God. I'm thinking of Johnson, but it's not his name. I'm thinking of Johnson.
The people that were already in the tent when you and the other chaps came, were they veterans of that unit?
They'd been recruited.
Like yourselves.
And we get out there and we didn't know anyone, you know, except that this is what we wanted to do, you know. And immediately they said, well, they won't do it. What do you mean it won't do it? You can't send. I says, well, this is, the range is not big enough.
This is the wireless that you've done.
It's not big enough. It's not strong enough to go on. That's all right. You'll be behind the lines. You won't be doing. I thought, God almighty.
So by now, were they explaining to you what the unit
now,
did?
The next day, we're finding our way around there. And almost, it seemed like the next day, about 32 brand new jeeps arrived and parked on the sand on the side of the canal. The hell did I want all the jeeps for? And I was still a bit wary of what the hell I was coming to. We soon found out, they said, oh, ordnance, they're going to ordnance. and no good pink like that. They've got to be painted sand colour. And we want everything taken off the Jeep from the windscreen downwards, flat. So when you looked at the Jeep, it wasn't much higher than that. It was about as high as the wheel. So it wasn't much higher than that. They took the windscreen off, took the back fixtures off, the whole lot. And this sort of took a few days, of course, doing this. Sterling was shouting about it. I'll get out one. Because they realised that they must get behind their lines. And they've got this is the only way, without the enemy seeing them, that they could possibly get behind the lines. And it was heaven made for it, because you had the North African coast right away along from Egypt, right away to Cyrenaica, Libya. Right to Libya, right to
Tripoli, were they not that far?
No, past Tripoli, into the country.
Tunisia.
Tunisia. That's right, right up to Tunisia. And they got them up there. And you had to get round them. Well, the only way it was heaven made, that was all coast road, and all the fighting was going on there that I mentioned before, going and coming and running out and getting more, God knows what else. Whereas right down below, you could have had a tea party, there was nobody bothering, you know. And that way, we got round with the Jeeps.
Had they explained just what their role was?
Not as much. It seemed to me, before they started with me and I was allocated as well, it seemed to me that they were not too worried about the newcomers, that's including me. And I was on the one, what have we got to do? Well, there's a wireless set there. Well, then, eventually, we'll sort that out for you. We'll do it. We've got to do this.
But how did you feel about when you heard that you operated way behind the lines? What was your initial feelings?
Scared. Well, how the hell am I going to exist? How can I exist? How can anybody exist by doing that? And here they are, these bloody tough nuts, you know. I don't know I don't know if there is one. I've got it somewhere.
It's a photograph.
Photograph with a bloke, his beard down here, where they're both sitting in front of the Jeep. His beard down here. And I thought, well, they can't be in the army. What the hell are they playing at? Everything was against being a soldier in the British Army. It just went completely by ignore everything. We are just pleasing ourselves and doing what we want to do. And the rest of it can go and fight the rims to the hearts out, you know.
So the discipline obviously was entirely different to what you'd been used to.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You had the discipline of, at first, was the fellows abroad, and they were on the same plateau when they were doing anything in action as a superior officer. The sergeants, the junior, they were all one and the same. All one and the same. They came and went and shot each other. When they got back, they were I couldn't show you because I had nothing there. Mm. They were allowed 3 days to keep their beard, and after that, they had to take it off. But they got the idea of people wanting to look at them and say, look at them, you know. 3 days with the beard and take it off. And we're back to normal again. Training, as soon as you train, things work. So, all that way, the Jeeps. And then what we were waiting for, there was a base, they had a base down in Jalo, which was well down south. Nobody's fighting down there. Again, you could have had a tea party if you like. That was open ground, you know. Jalo and another place called Kufra, which was nearer the German people. That's what they liked. But nobody used Kufra. We did overnight or whatever it was. And That was behind the German lines. But the Germans didn't come down there. Boom, 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 boom. They're all just coming and going along the African coast.
Can I just ask you, before we go into that, you'd met Stirling by now, had you, when you arrived there? What impression did he make on you?
I thought, why didn't he get his bloody hat on properly? Because it was an army hat, and he always got shaved. He never misused the dress. He always had it. He had a jerkin on if we're away, but he had that bloody silly hat on. I still call it. It wasn't a good shaped hat, an officer's hat. It was a straightforward peak, you know, something like the Salvation Army. And he was good like that. He didn't bother with anything. Him and Paddy Main were the main ones that they used to drink together, you know, and at a moment of euphoria they would have a damn good drink before going to bed or whatever they did like that. But again, there was only that one building and there was no beds to sleep on anyway.
But they were with you as obviously as you arrived. And what was Main like then, as Paddy Main, what was he like?
Mad, in my opinion. He wanted everything done. He would not take no for an answer. If you were doing something and you were going, you'd say, look, I can't go that way. I'll never get the jeep through there, you know. And you've got to move, or we've got to have something different. And he'd say, go that way. And you will bloody well get through, so Stalin. Tell me if you can't again, but you will get through. Big boulders in the way, shift the bloody things. You know, there was nothing that would stop Paddy Main. But he loved his SRS and the boys. And never saw a great deal, because he was away on operations. And he would come back, and then when he came back, I think he had some relations or a girlfriend or something in Flatland, Tyrol, and used to stay with them when we were back at base, because they weren't fighting the whole time. They'd be behind the lines for about 3 months, maybe 6 months. But in that event, they always had down at Jarlow and Kufra, there was always stuff to keep them going there. Petrol had been delivered and all the LRDG. I don't know if you've heard of those before.
Long Range Desert Group, yeah.
Long Range Desert Group used to take the supplies and things. They used to use great big 10-ton lorries and take the supplies up there, whereas the jeeps was just a jeep with two blokes with a .5 or twin Vickers or whatever it was. And that's what they used. And if we're going away, except for the wireless set on the back, you chuck everything off and they've got enough just to fire the guns and hightail it out again.